We're turning to Joshua chapter 7. Joshua chapter 7, a familiar chapter. And we will quickly read some verses from the chapter. You know the story that is here. Israel has entered the promised land. They've had a glorious victory over Jericho. Then that was marred by the fact that a man called Achan took plunder from the city of Jericho and kept it from him for himself, when God had commanded that all within the city was to be dedicated to him, all of value. This man stole it, some of it, for himself. The next battle they were engaged in was a battle against a little city called Ai. Human reasoning took over from the counsel of God, and instead of all of Israel going out, there was an element of pride, obviously, at work. Because it was decided, we don't need all to go, send just 3,000 men. Well, as a result of that, there was a defeat suffered at the hands of the men of Ai, and some 36 men were killed. This brought much consternation to Israel, brought them very quickly to their senses, and made them realize the battles that they had in front of them. And we read from verse 6, Joshua rent his clothes and fell to the earth upon his face before the ark of the Lord until the eventide, he and the elders of Israel, and put dust on their heads. And Joshua said, Alas, O Lord God, wherefore hast thou at all brought this people over Jordan to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites, to destroy us? Would to God we had been content to dwell on the other side Jordan. It's all God's fault. That's the way we think. O Lord, what shall I say when Israel turneth their backs before their enemies? For the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land shall hear of it and shall environ us around and cut off our name from the earth. And what wilt thou do unto thy great name? And the Lord said unto Joshua, Get thee up. Wherefore liest thou thus upon thy face? There's a time when it's wrong to pray. Yes, wrong to pray. This was one of them. Israel has sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant which I commanded them, for they have even taken of the accursed thing, and have also stolen and dissembled or deceived and put on a false face. That's what that word dissembled means, pretended. And they have put it even among their own stuff. Therefore the children of Israel shall not stand before their enemies, but turned their back before their enemies, because they were accursed. Neither will I be with you any more, except ye destroy the accursed thing from among you. May God bless the reading of His Word. We're going to continue our study of the problem of sin in the church. And today our topic is the dire consequences of sin in the church. Do you know, my friend, if you and I realize the consequences that sin in our lives and in the general life of the church brings, we would rise up with the greatest of alarm every time some wrong was done. We wouldn't lift the phone and talk to our local contact in the gossip circuit and say, "Do you know what so-and-so is doing?" No, you wouldn't do that. If you knew the consequences of sin, how alarmed you would be. How seized with consternation and fear you would be because of what comes upon a people as a consequence of sin. Whatever pleasure and apparent advantage Christians may think they obtain by disobeying God and indulging in sin is far outweighed by the price that they will have to pay for their sin. You be sure of that. I mentioned earlier Judas Iscariot. He reckoned 30 pieces of silver was pretty good. But however pleasurable handling that 30 pieces of silver for a short time was to him, for the last 2,000 years, he has been suffering the wrath of God. And he will suffer the wrath of God for all eternity. That's the price of sin. That's the price of sin. Sin is nothing to be fooled with, my friend. Sin is nothing to be fooled with. I remember reading some time ago of little boys that discovered a hand grenade. Oh, it was old and rusted and all the rest of it. They didn't fully recognize what it was and they were playing with it. I think it said they actually played a bit of football with it. And they brought it home. And one of the fathers spotted it and recognized it for what it was. And I can tell you this, there was some scattering out of the house. When it was recognized what lethal power those children were playing with. Enough to have blown them all to pieces. That's the story of sin. And I want to say to everybody here today that I know in my attempt to warn us all, and I include myself, for the words I utter are addressed first of all to me. They pass through my mind before they reach my lips and then your ears. The words that I address to each and every one of us will fall far short of the warning that ought to be given concerning the danger of sin. We could not be alarmed enough about sin. The dire consequences of sin for the Christian individually and for the church, the congregation, which embraces sin, is set forth in the verses 11 and 12 of this chapter. We'll read them again. Because whoever marked with failure may be my words of exhortation, these are God's words. Israel has sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant which I commanded them, for they have even taken of the accursed thing, and have also stolen, and dissembled also, and they have put it even among their own stuff. Therefore the children of Israel could not stand before their enemies, but turned their backs before their enemies, because they were accursed. Neither will I be with you any more, except ye destroy the accursed from among you. From these words, please note first of all that God's people are expected and required to stand before their enemies. Simple thought. Yet as full of significance as I hope to be able to show you. We are expected to stand before our enemies. This world is full of enemies for the people of God. Now, not each individual in the world who is not saved is potentially an enemy to the same degree as everyone else. I'm sure the British soldier, when he went out onto the battlefield, didn't quite fear the cook behind the lines that was preparing the food for the enemy soldiers, as he did the fellow on the front line with the bayonet fixed and a magazine full of ammunition and the light of battle in his eye. I'm sure he didn't fear equally those two men. But they were both enemies. This world is full of enemies, some more dangerous than others, but nevertheless the whole world is filled with enemies. We live in enemy territory. We do. We live in enemy territory. We talk about Ulster being our home. It's no such thing. It's no such thing. This is enemy territory. It's only by the grace of God we're allowed to live here. And it's only by the grace of God that any Christian is allowed to live anywhere. The United States glories in a number of titles for itself. The land of the free and the home of the brave. Complete nonsense. Complete nonsense. If there's freedom there for the Christian, it's by the mercy of God. He has them hedged about. Were he to take away that hedge, then, just like Job, they would feel what it's like to live in the midst of an enemy. We are surrounded by enemies, and we are required to face them and to stand before them. We must face our enemies. We cannot seek to avoid them without surrendering to them. You cannot avoid confronting your enemy without first surrendering to your enemy. If he challenges you and you turn away, there is surrender. And the child of God in their life must face the enemy. We must face the enemy. There are denominations that serve the purpose of not facing the enemy. Do you know that? There are people who want to belong to a church that doesn't have any controversy. The minister, they wish, will only preach the gospel. Or what they claim is the gospel, which is about 5% of what is the gospel. He doesn't come within a bagel's gowl of preaching the gospel if he doesn't face the enemy. If he doesn't tackle the enemy, he's not preaching the gospel. He's not speaking the whole counsel of God. He's running a nursery school for cowards. That's what he's doing. And I don't really have a great deal of time for such people. You may have guessed that. I don't have much time for folk like that. Folk who scatter and run whenever there's a bit of a controversy. Oh, we don't want that in our church. Well, then, you better get rid of Jesus, who is the captain of the Lord's host. Is that an honorary post? Is it an honorary post? There used to be boys running around this country and there were majors and captains and all the rest of it, and I question if they ever wore a uniform at all. It's sort of an honorary title. Is the fact that Jesus Christ is called the captain of the Lord's army, is that an honorary title? Or is he a fighting captain? Is he? I tell you, he is. And therefore, if you want to run some form of a church in which there is no confronting or no facing up to the enemy, you're going to have to get rid of the fighting captain. For he will not quite fit into such a camp of appeasement like that. We must face our enemy. We cannot avoid the enemy. For he'll come into your face. He will challenge you. He will confront you. And if you're going to back away from him and not face him, then you're going to have to surrender to him. You are surrendering when you back away. The spirit of appeasement and compromise is of the flesh. It's exploited by the devil. The devil has ever had his peace terms. And his peace terms are basically, you just surrender to me. Let me have my way. Don't challenge anything I do, and all will be well with you. You'll have no trouble from me. That's the devil's terms of peace. The Bible speaks oftentimes and gives us many illustrations of the peace of the devil. I like what I read in 1 Samuel chapter 15 and the verse 32. You ought to know this by heart, for I've taken you here so many times. Samuel the prophet, not Samuel the general, not Samuel the hard old battlefield campaigner, Samuel the prophet, the man of God, discovers that Saul has foolishly not carried out God's commands, but has taken Agag, the king of the Amalekites, a captive. This is wrong. So Samuel calls for him in verse 32, and it says, Agag, the king of the Amalekites, came unto him delicately. I think that's a lovely word. I can just imagine that owl reprobate tiptoeing forward with his face fixed in a false smile and his hands wringing together. I can just imagine the old rascal seeking to inveigle his way, if I might use an Ulsterism, into the affections and goodwill of Samuel. And he says, surely the bitterness of death is past. We've had enough fighting. And Samuel said, as the sword hath made women childless, so shall thy mother be childless among women. And Samuel hacked Agag in pieces before the Lord in Gilgal. Before the Lord. The Lord watched. The Lord looked on. He came down to see that it was done. Now out of the mouth of Agag came the words of peace. Surely the bitterness of death is past. And God tells us very clearly the nature of peace as propagated by the devil and his agents. Psalm 28 and the verse 3. draw me not away with the wicked and with the workers of iniquity, which speak peace to their neighbors, but mischief is in their hearts. Psalm 55 and the verse 21 of that Psalm 55. The words of his mouth were smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. His words were softer than oil, yet were they drawn swords. That's the heart of man, mankind. For they have a common heart when it comes to the people of God. A common heart. No matter how soft their words are, or how broad their smiles, or how gentle their speech, I tell you, they are by nature children of wrath. And they hate the people of God. And it is our responsibility, our duty before God, to stand up and face the enemy. Face up to the fact that there is an enemy. Face up to the fact that there are those opposed to us and who would rob us of all that the gospel has given us. We must face up to that. You must face up to it. You can't allow others to do the battling for you. You must stand with those who are battling. You can't quibble about it. You must stand with them. You might say, well, there's not much I can do. You can stand. That's a very important thing. Your company counts for a lot, you know, even though you might never strike a visible blow. There's a blow struck by the very fact that you're there. For you strengthen the hands of those who are called upon to fight. Not only face our enemies, but we must fight our enemies. We must engage them in combat. God calls us to war, you see, not to compromise and treaty making. God doesn't command us to make the best sort of agreement with the enemy that we can make. God doesn't call us to do that. The Bible does say, live at peace with all men as much as in your lives. We don't look for war. We don't look for confrontation. But when confrontation comes to us, we don't look for some form of compromise. We face them. We stand our ground. It is not God's will that we make a treaty. Now, I know that we are called upon to fight a much superior foe. I know that. Oh, that's ground enough for a lot of people to say, we've got to make peace. When the spies went into the promised land, as recorded in Numbers chapter 13, they saw the fullness of the fruitfulness of the land, but they also saw that there were formidable enemies there, some giants indeed, in whose sight they felt themselves to be but as grasshoppers. So they must have been pretty big men. And they said, we can't go in there. We can't go in there. We should go back to Egypt. They weren't going to face their enemies. They weren't going to fight their enemies. They were going to come to some other arrangement. And the judgment of God fell upon them, as you know. As you know, we fight a superior enemy. Paul gives us a description of that enemy in Ephesians chapter 6, well-known verse, the verse 12 of chapter 6 of Ephesians. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Now there's four againsts there. And I believe that the use of that word against each time introduces another element of the enemy. These are not four titles of the enemy, but these are four elements that make up the enemy. Look at it again. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities. Against principalities, against individuals, personalities of great power. Against powers, authorities. Against the rulers of the darkness of this world. Against spiritual wickedness in high places. Now, all of those titles indicate no mean enemy. This is not a rabble. These titles refer to creatures far superior to us in every way. And that's not talking about mankind that's opposed to us. This is just the spiritual entities, the evil spiritual entities that fight us and that muster depraved mankind against us. Well, we face an awful enemy. In fact, if we knew the full extent of the enemy we face, we'd run for our lives if it weren't for the grace of God. You remember when old Goliath came out and he roared? It says that the men of Israel fled from before him. Now, he was only a man, though he was bigger than two men, maybe far more than two men in bulk. But the whole of the army of Israel run from him. What would we not do if we could see those forces described for us in Ephesians chapter 6 and the verse 12? But though the enemy be mighty beyond description, we're to fight. Paul says we wrestle against these enemies. Not against flesh and blood, not just against man, our equals as it were, but we're fighting an enemy vastly superior to us. But fight them we must. Fight them we must. We must maintain war against them. In other words, we must never grow weary of the war. We must never say, I've had enough fighting. I'm going for the easy life. It's time I quit the battlefield. It's time somebody else did the battling. Believe me, this time last year, that thought entered my head with great power. As I saw developing in this country the situation that has since manifested itself more glaringly than it could ever have been anticipated 12 months ago. But back then, as I saw the trends and the directions that were being taken, I said, well, I'm due for retirement soon. There'll be somebody else take over in Kilskerry. I'll not get bothered. I'll just step aside and it's up to others. That's what I said. I don't think I've hidden that fact from you. I think I've commented on it a couple of times. But I certainly am commenting on it now. But that was wrong. That was not right. In Ecclesiastes chapter 8 and the verse 8, there's a little phrase that says, There is no discharge in this war. There's no discharge. You don't serve 25 years and then off you go with virtually 100% pay pension. No. To the day you die, you carry a sword. To the day you die, you fight. You fight. You mightn't be able to go out onto the battlefield as once you did, but you stay at home with the stuff and you pray for those who are fighting. You're still on active service, whatever form of active service that takes. Oh, I tell you, men and women, we are expected to face our enemies. We are expected to fight our enemies. And we must maintain war against them all our days. There's nowhere to go, you see. There's nowhere to go. There's no place to hide from this battle, this war. It's everywhere. And you must stand up for Jesus. You know, we're born to be warriors. When you were born again, you were born again in uniform. Do you know that? No pacifists among Christians. No, there's not. We're looking at 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy, the chapter 2. Verse 3, thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier. That's not just ministers or missionaries. It's every one of us. God has put within the heart of every true Christian a spirit of enmity toward the world and toward sin and toward the devil. That's what God has done. The flesh lusteth against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh. They that are born of the spirit lusteth, or go forth to war against that which is of the flesh. It's a battle that is fought out within our own hearts as we're combating the temptations to sin. It's a battle that's fought out in our prayer meetings as we combine together to pray against the powers of darkness. It's a battle that we unite with all of believers everywhere to stand up for the rights of Christ and oppose the claims of the world and the devil. We're born soldiers. If you're not a soldier, you're not born again. That's the truth of the matter. That's the truth of the matter. We're in an age and in an era of battle. You know, men and women, there's a lot of folk going astray. I mentioned the distress of heart that I feel with the news that Dr. Paisley was at least involved or linked to the sending of congratulations to Dr. Sean Brady on being elevated, if that's the right word. I'd reverse the direction suggested by that word to the position of a cardinal. That's vexing. You know what else happened this week? The Chancellor of Bob Jones University, Dr. Bob Jones III, came out publicly and said that he was going to back a Mormon to be the next President of the United States. You know, madness has broken loose. I have to say this. The words were hardly out of his mouth, but till the university put out a statement and said he was acting on his own and was no way representative of the university. Isn't that good? Pity we hadn't a bit more guts like that in the Free Presbyterian Church. I wonder how many congregations had some form of a statement made repudiating the news that Dr. Paisley was associated in some way with congratulations going to Dr. Sean Braley. It's a day of battle. And I want to say to each one of you today, as God is my witness, you can't get out of it. You can't get out of it. And it's not a battle in which we employ our wits or seek to be smart. But it's a battle to be fought as did David fight Goliath, running eagerly, gathering up a handful of stones. Oh, the wise men he left behind. Here, put on this, and here, put on that, and get this suit of armor on you. This is how you'll fight. I always find that absolutely ludicrous. This bunch of quivering cowards telling the young fella how to fight Goliath. If it had been me, I would have said, just a minute, fellas. If this is the way you feel he should be fought, why aren't you doing it? You know so much about fighting Goliath. There he is, away you go. Well, perhaps he did say it. But the Lord has been pleased not to reveal that to us. I must ask David the first time I see him. Now, it's not a day for craftiness. It's a day for open, bold, stepping out, motivated by a desire to honor the Lord and let God take care of the consequences. Well, we've only started on our study. We'll come back to it next week. No, possibly not next week, but we'll come back to it whenever that may be in the will of the Lord. Let's bow together, please, in prayer. Father, do bless us, we pray, with understanding. And, O God, enfold this congregation by thine almighty arms and keep us under the blood of the Lamb, I pray, and safeguard us from the enemy. To the glory of thy name we ask these things. Amen.